listening to On the Couch with Carly. Carly's couch is a safe space to talk. I'm a psychologist, but I'm not your pipe-smoking, tweed-wearing stereotype.
So, welcome back to On the Couch with Carly. Today, I have someone on the couch with me, so to speak, and that is Caroline ter Blanche. I probably just butchered your name because my Afrikaans is so atrocious, but Caroline has gotten hold of me after the last podcast that I shared about infant sleep and my take on infant sleep. Caroline got hold of me, and as you know, I always encourage everyone who listens to the podcast to comment and share their views. And so this is really what happens when you share your views. You get pulled onto the pod. So yeah, we are going to chat today a bit about Caroline's experience with sleep training and how that is in some ways quite different to what I spoke about on the last episode, but also has a lot in common with what I was sharing on the podcast. So without further ado, let's just get stuck in. Caroline, thanks for joining me today. To start off with, I just want to get, like, if you could just give a sort of summary. I know you emailed me and you told me a whole lot of things, but for my listeners' purposes, like, what did you hear in the podcast that I made? What did you connect with, and how did you want to reach out to me around that?
Yeah, so I think for me, what I really connected to was the part where, like, do what works for you. Because I often feel like, so I have an 8-month-old baby now, and we had actually, like, we'd been going through IVF for 5 years. I can't even remember if I shared that, but I'd been in my head preparing for this baby for a long time, and I thought I knew exactly what I wanted to do. So I didn't want to sleep train, and maybe I would try co-sleeping, and, you know, just a couple of things that I thought I knew this is how I wanted to do it. I knew this was the parenting style I was going to follow. And some of those things just didn't work out that way. And I can chat more about that. But for me, the important part is the, like, doing what works for you. And that took me a while, because I had this preconceived idea of what I wanted. It took me a while to get almost, like, desperate enough to do what would serve both me and my baby, and to give myself permission to try other ways, because I'd had this very, like, set idea. And yeah, so we sleep trained at, I think he was 5 months old. And that was a really, really hard decision. I had a friend who'd sleep trained her baby, and I'd always, like, she would talk about it and she would share what the experience was like. And I could see that she still had, like, really good attachment with her kids, and both her girls were sleep trained and both her girls really loved her. But I just thought I didn't want to do it that way. I actually remember a conversation very clearly with a colleague where I said I would never sleep train. And I'm in the mental health world, so you hear all the, like, attachment stories, and you know the theory and the fears that come up. Oh my word, I think it's in some ways even worse to parent if you know everything that can go wrong. But yeah, so it took us a while to decide to sleep train. And on the other side, like, sitting where I am now, I'm just every single day so grateful for it, because my experience being a mom since then, and I think for Leo being a baby since then, has been so much better, because his mom is not always crying. Every nap time isn't this, like, hours of pain for both of us, and this fear and, like, my apprehension that obviously feeds his anxiety, and then we're just in something that isn't great for either of us. And I feel like his lived experience and my experience as a mom has been better for it. So yeah, it's from a slightly different angle, but again, the same thing of, like, what works for you. And I also, like, I want to give, like, if listeners can realize what works for them, that they're allowed to think about things and allowed to, you know, take parts of things that work and parts of things that don't, and, like, figuring that out. Because I think there isn't enough permission. There's this false dichotomy of, we're in the sleep training camp, or we're in the not sleep training camp, or we're in the breastfeeding camp, or we're in the not breastfeeding camp, or we're in the baby-led weaning camp, or we're in the not baby-led weaning camp. And that, yeah, I don't think serves us well.
I love what you say there about the false dichotomies. And I think that is a very powerful message that I want everyone to hear, is this idea of these two camps, and how that, when, if we can speak to the experience of not fitting neatly into either one camp. I think we liberate not only ourselves, but everyone who can benefit from hearing our stories, that actually it's not about choosing between one or the other, and that those binaries don't serve us. So to sort of flesh it out a little bit more, can you just tell us a little bit more, tell me a little bit more about when you say that that you felt you were going to be one kind of a parent, and you had all these ideas about the kind of parent you'd be and the parenting style you would have. Can you just speak more about that? Like, what informed that? What were some of your expectations going into parenthood before you had even had the baby? Like, what did you believe? And like, if you think about the person that's listening to this, that might resonate with what you were feeling at the time. Like, just share so that everyone can understand exactly how normal it is to feel this way. Like, what was it that you were thinking in that way?
Yeah. So a lot about my preconceived ideas in terms of parenting, I think came from my journey with IVF and having wanted a baby for so long and having paid for multiple rounds of infertility treatment. And I got at some stage so resentful of moms moaning about their babies in conversation. And I would want to go just like, oh my word. Like, do you know what you have? Do you know what you have to be thankful for? I will never complain about my baby. So I had like a very rosy idea that I will love every moment of motherhood. That was my, I'm going to be in the moment and they're small for so only this amount of time. And if he wants to sleep in my bed, he can sleep in my bed. And if I need to rock him to sleep, I'll rock him to sleep. And I'll feed him as much as he needs to. Like, he can breastfeed for as long as he wants to. Yeah, so when he was born, so I must say I've always planned for a C-section. I was never going to try a natural birth. That just isn't, so that I realize is not in my personality. I need like a little bit of control where I can get it. But then we were in hospital, and as soon as we got home, I was so overwhelmed. I was breastfeeding, and I'm not a good sleeper. So I have struggled with insomnia in the past. So I just couldn't. So, I mean, he would fall asleep, and then it would take me almost like an hour and a half to fall asleep again. And just as I fall asleep, I'd have to wake up for him to feed again. So by like the second week, like 7 days in, my husband would wake up to me just like crying and crying, and Leo would be breastfeeding, and I'm just like kind of crying all over him. And yeah, so he said, I think you need to make an appointment with your psychiatrist again. And I did, and it's something we kind of had spoken through before. So like, I'm prone to anxiety and things like that as well. But yeah, so I had this idea of this was going to be this like this thing. So I'd like waited almost for like your birthday or for like opening a present or like going on holiday, and then it like rains all the time. So there was a real sense of grief, a real sense of like, this isn't how I expected motherhood to be. And I even said to my husband, like, I think we made a mistake doing IVF. We should never have done it. Like, I'm not cut out to be a mom. If this is what it is, I just can't. I can't function on this little sleep. It just doesn't work for me. And then, like, even with breastfeeding, we did something kind of unconventional. So I got a lactation consultant in, and we started that my husband does one early morning feed with a bottle, so express breast milk, but with a bottle. And that allowed me to sleep for at least like a time that I could like at least 3 hours or 4 hours and like sleep and wake up a little bit refreshed. And then, yeah, lots of people also, like very like in the breastfeeding camp, you shouldn't introduce a bottle early. You shouldn't and there are some risks to that. Like, look, it could mean that maybe he then didn't want to breastfeed anymore. But in some ways, I guess we were lucky and we really tried to avoid that as well and keep with breastfeeding. And that served me. So that served me in the way that it meant that I could actually have an end and a beginning to my day and wake up and be with my baby. And then with that, he's also just not a good sleeper. And I don't know what that's about. I don't know if that's like my anxiety or like his stuff or the relationships. I don't know, like genetic, because I don't sleep well. Because I thought babies just sleep. So I had this idea of like, they just sleep. Like they just lie there and they fall asleep if they want to sleep. I had no idea that it was like any amount of complexity. Like obviously I haven't had lots of exposure to that young babies. And the beginning was fine. Like the beginning he would sleep anywhere, and you like newborns, they sleep a lot, so that's lovely. But as soon as he started becoming like a little bit more of a person and a little bit interested in the world, we would for like from 2 months on, we would spend up to 3 hours a night trying to get him to sleep. So we would be rocking and humming and up and down, and then I would do an hour and my husband would do an hour, and he was screaming. Like he wasn't calm in that time. He was screaming at the top of his lungs for those 3 hours. So I hated bedtime, and then I was alone with him. I was on maternity leave for 6 months, so I was doing every single nap as well. So it got so bad that at some stage I was like, for 4 or 5 naps a day, I was literally walking up and down with him in the carrier. That was the only way I could get him to nap every single day. And then this like 2, 3 hour screaming session at night. And in that somewhere, I started to think about sleep training, and I followed all kinds of different accounts, which also is hard because every like Instagram account or influencer often is like in a camp. So then I would read about the benefits of co-sleeping, and I'm like, oh my God, now I can't sleep train. I feel so guilty. That's horrible. I'm gonna like mess up this whole relationship, blah, blah, blah. Then I would read about the benefits of sleep training, and I'm like, okay, cool. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna try it. Then I would read something else again. And I mean, the mom guilt, you're just so vulnerable. You're so sleep deprived. You're so full of hormones. It's such a, like, nothing can prepare you for the experience of a newborn. And I was so vulnerable to anything. Like, there was just so much guilt. So people weren't necessarily even trying to make me feel guilty, but anything anyone would say would make me feel guilty, and especially around considering sleep training. So someone would say, like, I could never leave my baby to cry. And I'm like, oh, shucks, that's such a bad mom. And like, I wanted this baby for so long, but then I can't keep doing this. So then I must not be cut out for motherhood. Like, what am I supposed to do here? And then a psychologist colleague of mine actually said something very wise. So she had three babies, and I was desperate. I messaged her. I'm like, just how do you get babies to sleep? Just tell me, what is the magic formula? Please, just like, you've had three, just tell me what to do. And she was just like, it's different. All three babies are different. Sleep train if you need to sleep train, co-sleep if you need to co-sleep, rock if you need to rock. Like, do what you need to do to survive this. And that, I was like, okay, cool. So she is a psychologist and I really trust her. And if she almost like gave me permission. And then we really looked at sleep training and we chose a method that is quite supported, and there's like 5 minute check-ins. And in the end, it actually turned out that he cried less with the sleep training than in my arms. And my baby is just a baby that is quite like sensory sensitive in many ways. He's like auditory sensitive and tactile sensitive, and he doesn't like that, like being held. So he just like, he's so happy if I put him in his crib and he can figure it out and he can get in a position that's comfortable and he can figure out how his body wants to lie. And that worked for him. So that's kind of my journey.
Okay. No, thanks for sharing. So what I'm picking up from that is, I mean, there's a lot of things that I'm hearing you say that is so relevant, not just to this conversation about sleep training, but just relevant to the work that I do around parent preparation and how I just feel there's such a absolute dearth of information out there for parents to support themselves with before they have a baby. So really be clued up on all the things that they should expect beforehand, because when we don't know what to expect, we tend to project an idealized picture onto the future when we're expecting children for some reason. I mean, even though you're an anxious type, because anxiety, you usually expect the worst, but for some reason, not actually for some reason, I know why we do this. It's because of the messaging that we get in society that motherhood is supposed to be the final destination of womanhood, and that, basically to become a mum is your biggest, most important achievement. And of course, a mother's love is just infinite, and you're going to have this baby that you're going to feel nothing but love for, and everything's going to be magical and beautiful and baked and golden light. So that's why we, for some reason, project this ideal, not for some reason, for that reason, project this idealized picture onto our images of the future when we're pregnant, when we're thinking about what it will be like to have a baby. And of course, babies are not like that. And our journey into motherhood is not like that. In fact, it's a real baptism by fire. And it is, even if you manage to avoid the shit show, wild roller coaster that is birth, in that way that you went for a Caesar, that's just one small part of it. And recovering from a Caesar, recovering from birth, attempting breastfeeding, doing round-the-clock breastfeeding, because that's what it is in the beginning, where you're literally on duty all the time, uninterrupted sleep. I mean, it's like torture. And then you're expected to be like grateful and enjoy every minute. It's so absurd that that's an expecting that was the expectation. And that then the message you give yourself is that if I don't enjoy every second, it's because I'm a bad mom. Everyone else seems to be enjoying every second. It must be me. So anyway,
Yeah,
that's what I'm
exactly.
hearing.
You like no one shows you the difficult times. Oh, shame. I actually think sometimes they do and we just don't listen, or I just didn't listen. Like my friend said to me, the one that sleep trained, she was like, Carlene, there's gonna come a day where you actually like want to hurt your baby. And I was like, no, man, that's ridiculous. I'll never do that. And there were days like that. And there was a day like I swore at him, I feel so guilty about that. Like that's just but yeah, it happens. You as you, like for all the factors you said, there's just so many new things. So, you're so vulnerable. The messaging around that we actually have so little support at the moment, mothers. It's just something quite bizarre that happens when you become a mom.
Yeah, it's very, very unfair. And so I think what I want to position this conversation, where I want to position this conversation is really to think about maternal mental health being the absolute sort of central importance to this whole picture, the whole system in general. And I think that I just want to also say, the idea that attachment is important is absolutely, without a doubt, the case. I mean, there is just no two ways about it. Attachment is the most important thing. Forming a secure bond with your baby is the most important thing. And I think that within that is this premise that we have to then sacrifice ourselves at all costs for the secure attachment. And that's where I go, okay, but maybe not that. Because there is no secure attachment without a mother who is thinking, and a mother who is able to process emotions, and a mother who is able to be in relationship to her child. So if whatever the context is, if it takes you out of your own, if you're so sort of if you're struggling so much that you're not able to think, that you're not able to be present to your child's emotions, that you're not able to do the work of mothering, then there's no then that's not ideal either. So I think it's about finding that balance. And I think what you're saying is really there's a lot of misconceptions. I mean, first of all, one of the things I wanted to say is infant sleep. The fact that you thought in babies just sleep, infant sleep is a really understood phenomenon. And really, babies do wake up a lot, and they're meant to wake up a lot. That's actually how they're designed. And ideally, if the sort of two people in that relationship are, if they have this sort of ideal kind of circumstances where their nervous systems get, sort of regulated by being close to one another, then I suppose co-sleeping makes sense because you are breastfeeding around the clock. You might as well lie in bed with your baby and pop the boob in their mouth when they wake up, and it just, they quickly go back to sleep, and it's not such a big deal. And for a lot of people, that works. But if that doesn't work, then what? And I guess That's where you're saying, okay, I'm not in this one camp, So where am I? Because I'm now being told that there's only another camp, and that is sleep training. And I think we also think of sleep training as as one thing. I think we think of sleep training as the cry it out method, where you put your baby in a room and you close the door and you walk away. And I know that for some people that has worked for them. And I know why that is, why there's massive critics of that approach. And that is because essentially your baby is, if your baby is crying and crying and crying and you're not responding to them at all, then the message they're getting is, there's no one here to respond to my needs. So I'm just going to stop calling out, but I'm not necessarily going to stop feeling scared or sad or anxious or whatever I'm feeling. And that's not what we want. We want to be responsive to our babies. So tell me about the method you used and how you knew that you were still being responsive to your baby and how you knew, and I want you to think about what it felt like in your body as well. How did you know that he could feel your presence, that he could, that you felt that the relationship and the bond between you did not get damaged?
Look, so that's actually really hard because I was so in survival mode. So what you said about attachment, like there has to be like an object to be attached to, but I was nothing. So I actually didn't feel like I had any relationship with him. So while he wasn't sleeping, well, he wasn't sleeping, I wasn't sleeping. I was just like, okay, I'm gonna feed you and like carry you around and like change your diaper, but I had no like he could have disappeared off the earth. This feels horrible, but this is how I felt. Like he could have disappeared off the earth, and I would just be like, "Oh, thank goodness I can breathe again." So it's almost like at that stage, there was so little to lose that the sleep training was this. I was like, "This better freaking work because otherwise, I'm gonna have to I don't know what like." I like there's almost no second plan. I'm gonna have to tell my husband he had to take care of the baby and I have to go back to work. That was my like other backup plan. Oh man, I researched I think every sleep training company in South Africa. I followed so many different accounts. I had a couple of like introductory calls with people. So the part of my mind that didn't want to harm the attachment was working. Like that was the thing that I was checking for, even though I didn't necessarily feel that there was big attachment at that stage. And in the end, I found a sleep training. So I wanted not like necessarily the company, but the person who was going to guide me through it. So I actually paid someone because I felt I wouldn't be able to do it alone. I wouldn't be able to even know like where to make changes. What is like my capacity for that was just not there. So I chose a pediatric occupational therapist and she does sleep training. So I knew, okay, cool. So she won't let me harm my attachment with my baby. My husband and I sat with it for a long time and we kind of discussed it. So he was a little bit more apprehensive until he started working from home a bit and then he could see just the absolute like drama it was. And then he also realized like we needed to do something. So I think I researched too much. I became a little bit overwhelmed by the amount of information and people and different methods and so on. So when I chose the person, so it was like, okay, cool. I feel like I can trust her. We had a long conversation. We had like a long introductory session. She asked me many questions about many, many, many different things about Leo, like his feeding times, where like what we tried before, his personality type, his sensory types, so things like that, where it felt it was really like a holistic view, and then trying to match a method to that. So then what we specifically did is I think it's called like the chair method or the sleepy lady shuffle or something. But basically you sit. So you do, so the first thing we did for like a week or two is we just implemented a nighttime routine. So we made sure that we did like a bath and a book and a nappy change and like, things like that, always in the same order so that he would kind of get used to that. So that already helped a little bit. And then we'd still rock him to sleep and he would go to bed, but it was still like very much a hit and a miss whether he would fall asleep or not. And then we decided, okay, we're going to start on Friday evening because I couldn't do it alone. Because look, like by that time, like Leo just, he has a tricky temperament. So he cries a lot anyway. He is a baby that just like is sensitive to change and doesn't like new environments and like lots of people overwhelm him. So I was used to his crying, but almost like in a PTSD way. So like as soon as he would cry, I would go like that. So I knew there would be some crying with the sleep training, but there had been crying anyways. So basically what we did is, I think it's 3 nights where you sit. So after the routine, you put him in bed and you say something like, "We're going to bed now," or like for me, I would say that in Afrikaans or whatever you want to say to him, give him a kiss, and then you would sit right next to him so he can see you. And he would like every 5 minutes, so he would try and fall asleep on his own. Every 5 minutes, he would reach in and then you would like pat him and stroke him and tell, so you wouldn't say anything. But we would say, like, the guideline was don't say anything, but we would say, like, "I'm here, it's okay," things like that. Even sitting next to him sometimes, that's where I like adapted it a bit. I would say, like, "I'm here next to you, mommy's right here, it's okay." And he actually fell asleep. All right, like he fell asleep in much less time, probably half the time than he would while we were rocking and things like that. So you do, yeah, I know. I was like, okay, cool stuff. Then we did that for 3 nights. Then 3 nights, you sit a little bit further where he can still see you. And then the third night, you sit in the room, but where he can't see you, but he can still smell you. Then you move out of the room. Then, like, after like months, you increase the intervals to 10 minutes. But by that time, he actually just fell asleep well. So, look, it's not like you still, so I think any sleep training method you choose, you still respond to your baby's needs. So even now, like I know that Leo usually falls asleep well at night, but if he wakes up 10 minutes later crying, screaming, and that goes on for longer than a minute or two, I would definitely go in. Like I'd go in, I'd pick him up, I wouldn't just leave him. And that's the kind of crux of it is, but now I have like the space for that. Now I have like the headspace for that. Now I have the capacity for that. Where previously I would just be like, "Oh my word," like if you woke up an hour after falling asleep, I would just be in tears. I'd just be like, "What do we do now? Like, what do we do?" But now I'm like, "Okay, cool, I can go and I can check and I can see what's happening for him." And sometimes, then we stand there a bit and then we rock him a bit and we hold him a bit. Like we're in Joburg now. So we're living at my parents' house while they're renovating in Cape Town. So it's a new environment for him. It's a change. It's many different people. Like it was a big day the day we flew. So that night I gave him more support around sleep and I checked in more regularly. So it's, I think that's what the attachment, like now, and even at the start, but I think my husband helped more there because I was overwhelmed. Like still seeing what he needs and being aware of his needs, but having a little bit of guidance and system. So that, yeah, so the sleep training method guided me, but here and there we did change things and we did do what felt like it was good for him and he needed it. And I would never let him scream at the top of his lungs for 40 minutes. Like I know his cry, so he makes like, it's so cute, he makes like a little like humming sound like when he falls asleep. But if he like cries at the top of his lungs, I know that's like a cry. But back then, I couldn't even distinguish that. So, yeah, it's tricky around the attachment stuff. I think that's what's also hard. The attachment stuff is hard. Like figuring it out is hard because your baby is another human being and he just can't tell you what he needs. So, does he need space? Does he need to be held? Does he need a nappy change? Is his throat sore? We'd still some nights just go through all of those things and try everything and,
Yeah.
yeah.
So, I mean, I find it really interesting. It sounds like you went the occupational therapist route, which has obviously helped you to understand the sensory personality of the child. And it sounds like that seemed to play a big role here, that there was maybe overstimulation before, that he was getting sort of his nervous system was getting activated by all the rocking and all the physical contact and maybe some visual stimulation. So that's really interesting that actually he prefers to have a little bit less contact. And I suppose where my curiosity was when you first spoke about it was that when you said he was like crying for like 3 hours, like I was thinking, gosh, was there maybe not a medical issue at that stage? And, I know that's really important to first rule out any medical issues. And I know people who've had really bad sleepers and then they've gone to the pediatrician or the doctor and they've gotten blood results back and the child is like severely anemic and has ridiculously low iron levels, or they've got a milk allergy that hasn't been picked up yet and they've just got an incredibly uncomfortable gut, for example. Those are some of the issues that can occur. So did you rule out all medical issues beforehand?
So we did all of that. So I cut out dairy for a long time, made no difference. We actually put him on reflux medication. That made a difference to him waking up less, but not to him falling asleep. So we looked at all of those things. I don't like hope, no shame. I didn't hope there was a medical issue, but I hope there was an explanation that we could do something about.
Yes.
And then we even like at some stage did like our own, like we would make the room really dark and we'd play the same Enya song every night. And that worked for like a week and then it stopped working. And I mean, I think with having a baby, it's just so hard. It is just that hard to figure it out and figure out what they need. And
Yeah.
as I kind of now I know him well, now I can identify his needs and I have the mental capacity to like, because there are two parts to what I think was happening with me and Leo. The one is the sensory stimulation part, the rocking, and I think became kind of overstimulated throughout the day from not having good naps, and then by nighttime everything was dysregulated. But also the emotional part. So between me and
Yeah.
him, this like, I get overwhelmed. I'm desperate for him to sleep. He doesn't feel safe if I'm holding him, if I'm feeling overwhelmed.
That's right. That's right.
So, and it's so tricky, I think, with sleep, but with a lot of things, to know what is the entry point. So, like, is it the medical thing? Is it the emotional thing? Is it the sensory thing? Parenting is just hard.
No, I think what you said is absolutely bang on. So for you, what, like, how quickly did your mental health change? Did this, did you, like, how quickly did you feel differently after the sleep training?
So I did a couple of things. So I upped my antidepressant, so that helped. Leo started sleeping better, that helped. And then it was over December, so my husband was around. So I had someone to share the load with. So I can't know which of those factors like played the big role, but all of those factors helped me be better, like become better.
Brilliant.
But now, what the sleep training has done now is that I don't have to be anxious about his sleep. So, me going back to work, us moving in with my parents for a bit while they renovate, getting a nanny, things like that. Like, sleep training isn't this like blanket, now everything's going to be perfect. Not at all. Like, when he's teething and when there are changes, things you still have to support a lot, we still support a lot. But I don't have to worry about it to that level. Like, oh my word, no one is going to be able to get my baby to sleep in any way. Like, that was my feeling before. It's like nothing we do can help him to sleep. So it's for my anxiety been really good subsequent to even that, like around
No.
many different changes.
No, I think that's a really good point. So what I want everyone to hear in this is that the co-sleeping sort of camp, their gold standard is closeness all the time. And that only works if you yourself are regulated, right? Like that only, like you cannot, you like this whole notion of co-regulation being super important. Co-regulation only works if you have a regulated nervous system. Your baby can't make use of your nervous system if it is itself dysregulated. And so we have to think that we have to know that the first step is for mom or the parent to be in a regulated place. That's actually step one. And so if you're dysregulated, I mean, the sort of three things that you said worked for you are really key here. Number one is actually support. I would say that's the first step. Is getting support. Are you supported? If you're trying to do this on your own and you're sleep deprived and you've got no support, it's near impossible. So having a partner there, or if failing that, having I don't know, a female relative or any relative or neighbor or friend or someone, even if you pay someone, a postpartum doula will do this for you as well. Someone in your community, another parent that you trust, a nanny, someone that a night nurse, all of these supportive figures can also really help in those early days when you're feeling totally overwhelmed and dysregulated because of the sleep deprivation and because of having a new baby and it's so hard. And then, like you said, dealing with the actual mental health concerns. So if you have a postpartum anxiety or mood disorder, that needs to be addressed. And to go to a psychiatrist to get medication is sometimes the absolute best thing you can do for your baby and for your attachment relationship. And then sleep training can be another sort of tool at your disposal if after those two things are sort of dealt with, and if you then realize that actually the major factor here to why I'm feeling so anxious or why I'm struggling so much to regulate myself is actually because of sleep deprivation. And that some people really, it's just that simple, that it's just we cannot function with that level of sleep deprivation. Then that is what will help you. And if we can sort of I don't know, counteract the guilt there by looking at it and saying, okay, yes, I might not be attending to my child's needs all through the night, or I might not be as close to my child physically as I could be, but what I'm doing for our relationship is is actually invaluable in that way, because I am supporting myself enough to get the sleep that I need so that I can be the mother to him in the at the time when we are close, which is because it's not to say that you're not close anymore. You obviously have moments of closeness, and in those moments you have a regulated nervous system, and that counts for so much.
And there, I think what's helpful is knowing that attachment isn't this like one moment or one thing. We have so many chances for attachment throughout a day, throughout a week, throughout obviously, like the early attachment parts are really, really important and foundational, but it's not like you break this and now it's. Again, it's not binary. It's not like you have attachment and you don't. There's always space for reparation and building attachment. Because yeah, the guilt is real. It's just so hard sitting there going, now I have to choose between my sleep and my child's attachment to me. But the like where I landed now, like looking back, obviously I have much more headspace and emotional processing space for this, but that was our best case scenario. And each person has to, with their internal resources, external resources, time resources, financial resources, support people around them, find what is best case scenario for them with what we have, with who I was, with who Leo was, with what we had available. This was the best case scenario. This was the best we could do.
Yes. And just because this was sort of the topic of today and we're almost closing, but just to say it even more, like, how did you know that it was what was right for you? Like, did you tell, could you tell because of something that you felt in your body? Did you, like, when you dropped into it, did you feel like you could trust yourself on the in those decisions, in those moments? And how did you know that? Like, if you had to speak to another mom right now who is in between these two camps and wondering where she falls into it and how to trust herself, how to just zone in on what is real for her, what is right for her and her baby, what would you say?
So I didn't have that. I didn't know it was right. I was just desperate enough where I actually think you shouldn't become that desperate. You shouldn't wait that long. So if you feel things like what I would tell myself if I were to have like next baby or could do it all over again, is maybe to look at Instagram a little bit less because that's very binary. And like allow myself to have conversations with people I trust, with moms I know where I, you know, every mom I think wants to be a good mom, but moms where I can see like, whoa, that's the kind of relationship I want to have with my child. And various, like I'm someone who I take I learn from other people, and I learn like from relationships. Like relationships are really important to me, and from that, being able to feel in yourself, and also that you aren't gonna know it's definitely right. You're gonna try something. So this kind of almost curious idea of like, if I start this, look, if you start sleep training and it's horrible and it feels terrible to you and your baby 2 weeks in, stop. Like you can stop. Like that's not. And I think that was also helpful for me. Kind of, I did know that we could, like, I didn't know what the other plan would be, but I did know that we could stop and that it wouldn't be like the be all and end all of the relationship. So I was curious to see if it would work and if it would make a change. And I think my husband and I said, if 2 months down the line, we feel like there aren't really benefits and it's only still horrible for everyone, we'll stop and we'll try something different. So yeah, that's. I wish I had the emotional space to drop into my body, but now looking back, I feel I can 100% with confidence say for us it was the right decision. Like that feels calming in my body, that feels good in my body. But his relentless crying, my relentless crying, I couldn't feel anything other than dysregulation in my body at that time.
Absolutely. But I think that's exactly the clarity that I'm saying is that you do know that it feels different in your body now. And you know that you can see and you can feel that whatever was going on there, it wasn't working. And this is working for you. And there's a sense of it was right, even though you didn't know at the time, but now you do, and it feels right inside of you. I like what you said also about trying and seeing how it feels, because I think that's what I hear. I mean, you're kind of, I mean, one side of the sleep training sort of spectrum, because well, not one side, but like one, you're on the sleep training spectrum, but another person, a lot of people actually speak to me about how they tried sleep training or were told to do sleep training. And when they tried it, it just felt so wrong to them. And that every fiber of their being just screamed no. And they just knew that it was not what they wanted. And I think in the same breath as it, you know, if it feels right to you, try it. And if it feels wrong, then it also, you know, to trust that and to rely on that. And I really like what you said about stepping away from Instagram, but rather speaking to people that you know, people who've experienced things that you can speak to and who you trust, because that is so much more worthwhile to actually have, even if it's just one person that you trust, who you really can share and feel safe with. That is really helpful as well. And I also really like the idea that it's not just one thing that creates attachment. But I really thank you for coming on and for sharing your story. I always think it's important to highlight actual real stories of motherhood and parenthood, and also just to sort of express this messiness, you know, this sort of, it's not a perfect science. No one really knows how to get it right. And maybe there isn't any real getting it right. I mean, I also know lots of fabulous people who have insecure attachments. You know, like, yes, we obviously want to have attachment at the foundation of our relationship with our children. And also, there is so many different shades of gray in between, and we have to also be okay with who we are and how we parent, and that it is going to be imperfect, and that it's about what is good enough. And I think what it feels like to me is that you were empowered to feel out what was good enough for you, and that it's okay that sometimes you use parent-led interventions in order to do that. So yeah, thanks so much for your time. Do you have any other questions or comments before we say goodbye?
Yeah, I think the last thing is maybe just because you were talking about the like preparation pre-birth, and all of that preparation is around like the birth and the nursery and stuff like that. And the one thing I wish I knew is that my baby was going to be his own person. Like he was going to be him, and I would have to get to know him. He wouldn't just pop out as this like baby who I say, you're gonna sleep like this and you're gonna do this. And that is just, I wish I knew that, because that means there isn't gonna be a one size fits all, because it's me, my own person in relationship with him, his own person. He doesn't know himself. I don't know him. So that gives some room for like figuring things out.
Absolutely. I love that. And also just to reckon with the fact that actually getting to know another person that close is probably one of the hardest things we'll ever do in life. Like it's not a small feat to meet a new person who's never experienced life before and be the person that gets to know him, but also has to keep him safe, has to take care of him, keep him alive, and structure, support and scaffold his entire sort of journey and learning of the world around him. Like you are his world at first, and that's a huge responsibility. So yes, I totally agree with what you're saying about learning him as a person, and it's so important to know that, and also to know that it's hard, and to know that it's going to be the biggest thing you'll ever do in your whole life, and so you need lots and lots of support. And it sounds like you've got that, so I'm really glad to hear that. But thank you so much for chatting today, Karline, and good luck with the move and everything that you got ahead of you. And
Thanks,
enjoy Lady
Carly.
Leo.
Thank you. And thank you for making the space. It was really lovely to share my story.
Cool. Take care.